Tomorrow, the effort to recall Governor Walker gets underway. We will talk about the latest developments and a whole lot more in this edition of the State Capitol Report. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio at 7 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, November the 14th. Our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, is with us to bring us up to date on the latest news in state policy and politics for the first half of our State Capitol Report. And then after 7:30, we will welcome in an education policy professor to discuss a new survey of Wisconsin school district administrators who say Governor Walker's budget is not working well for them and in terms of education. And we welcome your input, too. If you have a question about what's new in state politics, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk at WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol Reporter. Good morning, Sean.
Morning, Joy.
So this recall effort starts officially tomorrow.
Yeah, the big recall effort that has unions and Democrats and all their allies basically pulling in the same direction begins tomorrow. And, we haven't seen anything like this in our lifetimes, really, an attempt to recall a statewide official with this level of organization. They've got to get 540,000 plus signatures. Of course, they're going to want to get more than that because inevitably some of those will be challenged in court. And they've got 60 days to do it. And those 60 days fall over cold weather. They fall over holidays. And it's no easy task. So it begins tomorrow. And so, don't be surprised if you have somebody in your neighborhood ask you
knocking on your door. Yeah.
Right?
So now, as far as you know, Sean, are the recall petitioners going to be collecting signatures to recall Governor Walker and a separate petition to recall Lieutenant Governor Clayfish?
As far as I know. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I haven't seen copies of what their petitions are going to look like and how they're going to go about it. If they'll just have, everybody have two sets of clipboards and they'll say, here's one for the governor, here's one for Rebecca Clayfish. But you have to, just recalling, or just going after the governor is not going after the governor's ticket. It's not been, ruled as that way by the state's attorney general. The state's government accountability board advised along the same lines, but threw it to the attorney general just to make sure. So however they do it, they would need to get two sets of signatures.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller who has a point about the recall effort that I'll bring in during this part of the conversation. Chet in Athens. Hi, Chet.
Yes, good morning. I don't want to be an alarmist, but I've heard through the grapevine that there's a conspiracy underway where Walker backers can walk around with a clipboard, get your signature to recall him, and on the way home, the signatures disappear in the central wastebasket, and you think you've written a recall signature. Is there any truth to that, do you think?
Chet, I mean, I've read the same suggestion that you have. I think it came through Facebook postings.
Yes.
And so, I mean, just sitting here in my position, I can't confirm, whether that's a widespread plot or if it was any kind of plot at all. I mean, I know it was something that showed up on Facebook. It's something that the Democratic Party of Wisconsin is highlighting. They say they're watching it. I can't really tell you any more than you know at this point.
Is it, Sean, as far as you know with the rules, if are you, as a citizen, is it okay for you to sign more than one recall petition?
There could be multiple recall efforts going on at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could, you could sign a recall petition for, say, the one that starts tomorrow with Democratic Party, United Wisconsin, We Are Wisconsin, et cetera. And then, say another group could start another signature drive in, January, let's say, or citizens to recall the governor. You could sign that, too. So it does add a certain amount of confusion to things. But the point is, you're not – the the thing that the Government Accountability Board is going to look at and courts are going to look at is that you didn't sign more than one petition for one recall effort. So the big Democratic recall effort that starts tomorrow, you can only sign that once.
Yeah, a spokesperson for the Democratic Party is saying in the news, these folks want to create confusion. They want to sow fear. That's their modus operandi. And this is, there were some Facebook postings saying, I'm going to go around and collect signatures and then I'll just burn them up kind of a thing.
Right.
We don't know if this is really going to happen.
Just people on there trying to spook Democrats or what it is.
Yeah.
It's really impossible from our vantage point to substantiate that.
And this is that there was a recall effort that was organized more than a week ago,
mm-hmm. but
this was not by the Democratic Party or Citizens United. This was this was filed by a donor of Governor Walker's.
Yeah, somebody who had given small donations to the governor filed the recall paperwork starting on November 4th. So, technically that signature drive, his signature drive is still underway, although, we don't know what's going on there, but it looks like that was an effort to sort of open the fundraising spigot for the governor, because once a recall is underway against a public official in Wisconsin, that official, the normal campaign finance limits go out the window, and you don't have any limits on what you can raise as long as you spend that money to fend off a recall.
Yeah. And I know the supporters of a recall, Governor Walker's critics, are feeling a little emboldened these days by the vote in Ohio last week, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, there was a referendum in Ohio. It's a different situation than here in terms of the laws on how they deal with stuff that they want to change versus here. They have a referendum process, in that referendum process, the collective bargaining law, Ohio's collective bargaining law, that was signed by Republican Governor John Kasich and passed by a Republican-controlled legislature, it went down in a big way. I think 61%, I want to say, of voters said voted against the law, basically killing it. So it that law never took effect in Ohio because of their referendum process.
Yeah, are Governor Walker or Republicans responding to that Ohio vote at all?
Yeah, you can imagine that the Democrats are saying, your next governor. The governor's saying it's a different situation because the Ohio law never took effect. People never got to see how it worked. Also, the Ohio law did cover police and firefighters, which Wisconsin's law exempted. It makes it harder to run an ad if you're a critic of the law saying you've taken away a fundamental right from the people that are out there in the street to protect us, stuff like that. So in that respect, it is different.
The Government Accountability Board last week did rule on whether or not recall organizers can circulate petitions online.
Yeah, and it's this is an issue where it appeared that they were taking some of the legislature's concerns in mind. The board had previously said that there was nothing in state statute that prevented groups from sending out personalized, customized recall petitions with somebody's information all filled out for them in a PDF form. All that person would have to do is print it out, sign it, send it off to the recall organizers, and basically that's one petition sent in. The legislature expressed some concerns over that, so the board came back last week and said a few caveats there. You can still do that, but you have to fill out most of the address yourself, aside from the city where you live, and you have to, then you still have to sign it yourself. So I guess they were looking at those as safeguards to show that it wasn't somebody's, it wasn't just a major mailing list sent out with forged signatures. Although we don't know how the legislature is going to respond to what the board did.
And what did the Government Accountability Board, the GAB, do in regards to university student IDs?
Yeah, this is interesting. They had a couple issues before them. One was whether universities should be able to use stickers to renew their student IDs for the purposes of voting under the new voter ID law. The voter ID law does allow for student IDs at a college, accredited college or university, to be used for voting. But there's a quirk in the law where an ID can only be a couple years old. It can't have expired within a couple of years. So most student IDs, you know, at four-year institutions last 4 years. So the universities had to figure out how are they going to, they still have to figure out how are they going to deal with that. If students want to use these IDs to vote, what do we do? So there was an idea floated out there that they could use stickers. And, you know, the much in the way, same way that you would used to update your driver's license. You put a sticker on there, you update your student ID in that way. The board, you know, the legislature expressed some concerns about this the last time it met and discussed it.
They think that this would not be secure enough, or that it might hanky panky could happen.
That there's potential for that, but the board came back and they voted for it anyway. They said that this is a you know, we can come back and deal with the details on what these stickers, you know, what guidelines they have to follow so they're secure. But they said that this sticker thing should be an option for a university, especially a small university, that maybe can't afford to print a separate ID for voting purposes or something along those lines. So the board said that we think stickers are okay under law. They also said, and this was a complete reversal, at their last meeting they had said 6-0, tech school IDs should not be allowed to vote. And came back at their meeting this past week after hearing extensive testimony, receiving, you know, a number of letters from tech school teachers, administrators, students. The board came back and unanimously said we were wrong. They said that, you know, we basically looked at the wrong section of the statutes when we applied this, and that the important thing that you look at is that technical colleges in Wisconsin are, by every definition, a college or university, and they are accredited. And so there's nothing under state law that says they shouldn't count. You actually had Board Chair Thomas Barland saying that when you look at issues like voting along these lines, it's somebody's constitutional right, and so you have to interpret the statutes differently.
And there are some lawmakers who are not happy with the Government Accountability Board's decision when it comes to tech college IDs and stickers on college IDs.
Yeah, and this is, you know, we said a couple weeks ago, the legislative session officially ended a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But there are committees in the legislature that have so much power, like the Joint Finance Committee, like the Joint Committee for Review on Administrative Rules, that there's going to be some big decisions. There have been some big decisions, and there will be some big decisions here, you know, in November on issues like this one. And this committee could come back. They're meeting tomorrow. They could tell the board, look, you overstepped your bounds here. We need you to, you know, we need you to write rules on these because we need to review what you're talking about. The board could write those rules that spells out what it means to vote, you know, what it means to have a sticker on an ID, et cetera. And then that legislative committee, which is controlled by Republicans, could come back later and say, we're going to suspend that rule, you know, effectively vetoing it. It's kind of a long dance to get to where they want to go, but that is one thing that could possibly happen.
Well, we'll also talk about one of the rules that committee ended up killing last week that has to do with the 4-hour training requirement for concealed carry permits. We'll talk about that and some other issues from under the state capitol dome as our state capitol report continues with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you have a question. It's going to be partly to mostly cloudy with a few sprinkles today. A high temperature, upper 40s in the north, mid 50s in the south. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is our State Capitol Report. Coming up in our next half hour, a new survey of school district administrators was released last week. We'll talk about what it said regarding budget cuts to Wisconsin schools coming up in our next half hour. Right now, talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio State government reporter. And Sean, lots to cover, but a caller, Tom in Burlington, has a question about the student ID issue. Hi, Tom, you're on the air.
Hi, Joey. Hi, Sean. Good morning.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah, I was wondering why colleges and schools are going through such efforts to make the IDs comply with the voter ID law when any eligible voter can get a free ID already. I know it, you know, it's allowed and can be used, but it's not required that they're used.
So what's the, I mean, the Republicans want everybody to use a state issue or a government issued photo ID. Isn't that right, Sean?
Yeah. And, you know, the number one ID most people are going to use is going to be a driver's license, probably. And if you don't have a driver's license, and as long as you mark a check on the form, you can qualify for a state issued ID at state's cost. But yeah, I mean, there are those are possibilities as to why the schools did this. I mean, I think it's easier to see from the tech school's perspective. If you're going to allow student IDs to vote, and tech schools students represent something like 10% of the voting age population in Wisconsin, and you know, this government accountability board was going to say your IDs don't count, you can understand why that would rub the tech school administrators, teachers, and students wrong. You know, as far as the stickers go, there's actually less of a push to have those stickers accepted. UW-Madison was interested in doing that, and they backed off. But the board kind of, you know, the board said that it should be an option if anybody's looking to do this.
Yeah. Well, moving on to another issue, Sean, there was a rule that was suspended by this legislative committee on administrative rules regarding concealed carry.
Yeah, that same committee that's going to be tomorrow. They met to talk about the training requirement in the concealed carry law, and basically the concealed carry law, when it passed the legislature, said that you can have that. That you have to have training, but they left it up to the Department of Justice to define what that training was. The Department of Justice, Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen, came back and said 4 hours of training is basically the industry standard. They wrote that into a rule, and then the legislature's rules committee came back and you know, suspended that rule. So in a way, it's a situation that allowed Republicans to sort of have their cake and eat it too. They passed this bill with pretty large margin in the legislature, had a bipartisan vote. A number of people who voted for it, you know, may have been voting for it on the grounds that it was going to have this training requirement. And then through the rules process, essentially that training requirement was gutted, although other provisions of, you know, like background checks still remain in that bill.
So in essence, you can get a concealed carry permit now, as long as you've had some training, but you don't have to prove that you've had 4 hours of training.
Yeah, I mean, it ends up being up to the person to decide what kind of training is right for them instead of having some minimum standard.
Yeah. We're almost out of time, so we better hurry up and talk about the Joint Finance Committee last week approved a $500 million cut to Badger Care.
Yeah, I'll run through this real quick. This was something, a plan that was proposed by Department of Health Services Secretary Dennis Smith of the Walker administration. And I guess broadly speaking, it's a waiver request, and it raises premiums for thousands of Badger Care recipients. It takes away some services that some people currently receive under Badger Care. The goal, though, is to close a $500 million deficit in the program. And he stressed that while there will be people who leave Badger Care because of this, it's the percentage-wise, the number's small.
The overall cost of Medicaid will continue to increase. Our budget will increase. What we're talking about is trying to slow the rate of growth into the program that looks more in line with the overall economy.
And when the administration first rolled out this plan, this is a waiver request that has to be approved by the Obama administration. It did it as under the guise of, if we don't get this, then the alternative is we're going to have to kick 53,000 people off of Badger Care, that would be the alternative. Papers come out from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau last week, though, that show that while the state may not be kicking off that many people, that practically speaking, because of, you know, everything from higher premiums to crowd out rules, that you're actually going to have 65,000 people fewer on the Badger Care rolls, including nearly 30,000 children who currently receive Badger Care but won't because of this plan. And so Democrats like Poplar Senator Bob Jauch were, you know, Jauch especially was visibly irritated by the secretary's presentation.
I must admit that it's really troubling for me to listen to the casual way in which you were making a presentation today that will result in less health care benefits to many, tens of thousands of working class families and unsuspecting children. It appears, Mr. Secretary, as though you're talking about widgets instead of people.
We should also, Sean, talk briefly that there will be an assembly hearing on that sex education bill this week.
Yeah, that was a bill that passed the Senate and says that, you know, that it gets rid of the requirement that if schools teach sex ed, they have to talk about contraceptives, includes a new requirement that if you teach sex ed, you do have to talk about abstinence and the benefits of marriage.
Yeah. Just a minute to go. Big loss in the passing of the dean of the Capitol Press Corps last week, Dick Wheeler.
Yeah, and just a number of very sad people around the building. If you observe state government news from around the state, you may find yourself traveling to the WheelerReport.com or receiving, you know, you may subscribe to the Wheeler newsletter. But I got to say, inside the building, it's hard to explain just what a big presence Dick was, and truly an institution of state government. He's somebody that commanded respect from everyone, from the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court to, you know, the governor would make, it was actually, I remember his first press conference after being elected, he made a beeline over to Dick at a press conference to sort of pay his respects and say hello last year.
Wow.
But Dick was just as at home with, you know, the building's employees, from the police to custodians, and just a real great guy to talk to, and we'll be missed.
There's a memorial at 4 p.m. in the Capitol on Tuesday?
Yes, 4 p.m. in the Capitol Rotunda.
Thanks for being here, Sean. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio, State Capitol Reporter. We'll talk about budget cuts and education and a new survey that is out coming up after we check the latest news. This is the Ideas Network.